Some things shouldn't be transparent, like stop signs. But what you pay for should always be clear, like Hiller's True Transparency Pricing, always clearly itemized and never any hidden fees. Because you have the right to know what you're paying for. For more information, visit happyhiller.com/true-transparency-pricing. Happy you'll be, or the service is free.
Call the Happy Face Truck today.
Midday 180 served up by Wendy's. About to be joined by Greg Cosell from NFL Films. He's presented each and every week by the Huffaker Group. THGTN.com if you're looking to buy or sell this time of year. Last night on Titans Radio, the Mike Vrabel show, where Coach Vrabel took a Twitter question about moving Conklin inside and Kelly to tackle, and here's Vrabel's answer.
I always appreciate everybody's concern and thoughts, and we do. We look at all that stuff quite often. You know, and I think that it's not quite as easy as taking a guy and say, hey, go just play guard. I think that if it was, you know, we try to look at a lot of different things that can help us. We go through a lot of different scenarios, and we try to practice things, and we try to talk through things. And, you know, I think that that's something we'll always consider, is trying to do things that help us win, whether that be personnel-wise or scheme-wise.
Now, last week we asked Greg Cosell this question, and he said it was more of an off-season topic to address than in-season based on personnel right now. Greg, how are you?
Jonathan, I'm doing well.
After seeing the offensive line play on Monday night and evaluating this game, should they look to make a move on the right side of the line at guard?
You mean in the off-season? It's not going to happen now.
Okay.
Yeah.
So nothing changed in a week for you?
Well, I mean, I still think Conklin remains a liability in one-on-one pass protection versus quality edge pass rushers, and I think that showed up again this week. You know, he has too many bad snaps. That's the problem. Too many bad snaps in one-on-one protection. He had consecutive bad snaps versus Merciless and Covington in the third quarter. Both resulted in sacks. I think that they're fairly representative of Conklin's issues in pass protection when it's one-on-one. Now, we've discussed this. A lot of that is a function of game situations, down in distance, a number of different things, whether you choose to help an offensive tackle or not. There's many factors that go into it, and Mike Vrabel is right in the sense that you cannot just, you know, today say, okay, he's our guard now. You know, it's not quite that easy. I'm just talking skill set-wise. And I go back to my evaluation of Conklin when he came out of Michigan State, and I know he was a high draft choice, and he was a high draft choice to fit a different scheme than the one that's presently run. I did not see him as that high a pick as a tackle, and thought that if he was going to play tackle, he was a later round pick, and that he was potentially a guard in the NFL. So that's the way I felt. You know, people can interpret what they see differently, but he is clearly, based on tape study, somewhat of a liability in one-on-one pass protection.
What about Klein at right guard?
Didn't they just sign him to a deal?
They did,
yeah.
Yeah, again, now it gets down to what you're looking for. I think that Klein can play depending on who else you have around him. In other words, I don't think Conklin is the kind of tackle that can play next to Klein. I think Klein is a grinder. He's a competitor. The problem with the interior of their offensive line, in my view, is they're not particularly athletic. And I think their O-line overall is not, with the exception of Taylor Lewan. And I'm not sure that the film shows that he's had a great season. Which does not mean that he's not a highly talented traits guy. It's not that you're certainly not going to be looking to get rid of him, but I think that their O-line is not particularly athletic. And while you don't have to have five dancing bears and you know, nimble big guys as your O-line, I think somewhere along the line in today's NFL, you need some athleticism in that group, and I think they're lacking in that area.
What are they doing to hide that offensive line? I know it's impossible to completely hide an offensive line, but are they going max protect? Are they doing some different things to help out an offensive line that has not protected Mariota well?
Well, there's You can do that formationally, Chad. You don't necessarily have to block with seven. You can help formationally by, let's say you're playing a good pass rusher and you want to help Conklin, let's say. You know, you can line up a tight end on that side, and that makes it a little more difficult for a pass rusher. You can obviously chip with a back or a tight end before he releases into a route. You do those things. The issue with that, and this is why you have to think long and hard about your old linemen, is you then limit yourself in your pass game because you're reducing the number of eligible receivers that get into routes. And that makes it easier for the defense before the ball's even snapped. So, yes, you can help. You can always help. But it's what then results from that. And look, protection is the most important thing. You do not have a pass game if you can't protect. So that is number one. But there's risks and rewards that go along with that.
And Vrabel mentioned that, you know, Houston runs some two-man routes to get their protection, but they've got DeAndre Hopkins running routes, and the Titans don't have that option.
Well, then, yeah, then you need, obviously, receivers who can win one-on-one. And obviously they hope Corey Davis can develop into that guy, but he's certainly not at the level of DeAndre Hopkins as we speak today.
I dug up a couple plays that worked against Vrabel's Texans defense last year that showed why he thought this play could work. Now, they were run by guys who were actually NFL fullbacks who I'm sure had touched the ball before. Luke Stocker had not. They were run with offensive linemen who clearly were...
Oh, you're talking about that fourth and one?
...blocking better. What kind of chance did that play have at the snap, and what did you think of it overall?
Well, clearly, that's a surprise deception play. I mean, that's why you're calling it. And when those plays work, they're brilliant. You know, when they don't work, then, oh my God, how do you not give it to, you know, Lewis or Henry or have Mariota roll out? I mean, those are surprise deception plays. And we've seen them work. We've seen them not work. PK, I don't really know what else to say about something like that because it obviously didn't work. So it becomes, now that we have access to the result, that's an easy thing to rip. But, you know, they call it because they anticipate that the defense, they don't need a lot of yards, a lot of real estate. So they call it because they don't anticipate the defense to be ready for that particular play. And all he needs is 2 inches more than what's needed. He doesn't need to gain 5 yards. So, I struggle with questioning play calls like that. You know, it didn't work. So therefore, people view it as a terrible play call.
I don't struggle. I'd put the ball in anybody's hands who was eligible outside of Michael Pruitt ahead of Luke Stocker as a running back. It was foolishness. That's not your
Greg,
ballpark.
I made the point yesterday. I don't think anyone was gaining that half yard based on where they ran it and how they blocked it.
Yeah, and that's possible. I mean, I don't remember the exact, I don't have the play, you know, up as we speak. So, you know, what you're basically doing with a play like that is you're saying, you know, that in order for us to be a good team, we've got to win and get half a yard or whatever it was, and we've got to be more physical than the opponent. And that's what you're saying. That's what you're telling your team. We're going to win with physicality up front. And they didn't.
Why did the Titans defense struggle so much with the outside zone cutback runs from Lamar Miller?
Well, I mean, he had a couple of big runs, and that's what gained the yards. I mean, obviously, he had the 97-yarder, which was, you know, two tackles should have been made. That should not have been a big gain. I mean, what happened on that is you had Evans actually did a great job on that, playing downhill and taking on the pulling tackle Davenport. Woodyard has to make that play for a 3-yard gain. I mean, that's Woodyard's play. And then Byard, who is a single high safety, he's got to make the tackle, so it should have been an 8-yard gain. So that became a 97-yard touchdown. Then there were a couple of other runs that were nice. Miller had a very nice 21-yard run on their second possession, which was outside zone, and he cut back really hard. And I don't remember who the backside backer was. It might have been Woodyard, but I don't want to call him out if it wasn't. But whoever was the backside backer on that play, stack backer, overran it. So, again, you know, that's a play that when you draw it up and you practice it, that player has to be where Miller cut back, and he wasn't. And that's normally why you get bigger runs. It's either a function of missed tackles or guys stepping outside of their gap integrity.
Jarrell Casey was excited before this season about playing almost predominantly three technique was the plan for him, not that he wasn't going to bounce side to side. obviously, Daquan Jones, Austin Johnson, and the people around him not offering much support, which allows for plenty of attention for him. Is he the same guy? Is he disrupting to the same level? Is he causing the same amount of problems?
I would say he's probably not, but it's hard for me to say that that's his fault. You know, I still think he's a good player. It just could be a new defense. Maybe different responsibilities, different assignments. You know, I would think overall, though, that the defense has not really been the problem with this team this year. There's been moments, and I think the moments have become exacerbated because their offense has been so up and down. But I think, they've not given up. I don't know if this game changed it. They've not given up 20 points per game on average, have they? I don't think so.
They're sixth in scoring defense now. And still
yeah. But, I mean, I think their defense overall has been a pretty solid group. They've had the problem they've had is there have been some big plays that have killed them. Like you go back to the game in London with the L.A. Chargers with the two long touchdowns against quarters coverage, the 97-yard touchdown this week. There's been some big plays that have really hurt them, and that's always a problem because you don't want to give up those kinds of explosive plays. But I think overall it's hard to put – their record, which is 5-6 now, correct?
Yep. Yes.
I think it's really hard to place significant blame on the defense overall.
104.5 The Zone, the official station of Titans football. Sunday, the Titans host the New York Jets. Coverage begins Sunday afternoon at 1 on 104.5 The Zone.
Midday 180 served up by Wendy's. Greg Cosell is with us. He's presented by the Huffacre Group of Keller Williams Realty. Greg, we spent a lot of time preseason and before the camp even broke about the Rams offense and what the Titans were trying to bring in with Mariota and what the concepts would look like. Do you see anything similar to the LA Rams offense when you watch the Titans?
Well, it starts with personnel, and that's where it's so dissimilar. And I don't know if it's a function of what they feel they have at wide receiver and don't have at wide receiver because the Rams, the Rams play with 11 personnel, meaning three wide receivers on the field on about 97% of their snaps. In fact, in the last four games, the Rams have played in 11 personnel on every single snap. We know that's not what the Titans do. So either Matt LaFleur has his own point of view and he wants to expand based on his worldview, or he simply does not believe he has the personnel to execute that style of offense. But at this point, from a personnel standpoint, which then limits you from a route standpoint as well, it doesn't really look like the Rams offense, conceptually.
How did Houston change coverages against Corey Davis as that game wore on? He had several catches early, and then he ended with four targets and four receptions.
Well, you know, I think that there were a lot of check down throws. There were a lot of short throws in that game. You know, I mean, the 48-yard touchdown did come late in the third quarter.
Right.
And that did come out they did have 11 personnel on the field. It's funny that you mentioned Corey Davis following what I just said, because that had a Rams look to it. There were minus splits. It was 11 personnel with what we call a 2-by-2 set, two receivers on each side and a back in the backfield. And so they were minus splits, tight to the formation, just like the Rams. And Davis ran the out and go, and he beat left corner Joseph, and they were in man coverage. So, you know, that play did happen in the third quarter, but that was a game where there were a lot of very short throws. Mariota always walks a fine line, in my view, between throwing with rhythm and timing to the design of the play, and when that's not quite there or he doesn't feel like it's there, I think he checks it down pretty quickly. At this point in his career and in this offense, he's not yet what I would call a late in the down quarterback, so there's not a lot of balls that are going to be thrown later in the down from the pocket at the intermediate levels. So I think Corey Davis actually becomes a function of that as well. There are times Davis wins in his route and doesn't get the ball. Now, I don't want to say that he's supposed to get the ball because I don't know exactly how they map out their route concepts and reading progressions, but there are times Davis wins and he's open and the ball's not thrown to him.
Vrabel gave a very peculiar answer when I asked him about this yesterday. I said, you guys have done a good job targeting Corey Davis like 10 times on average, several games in a row, I think, And then he only went to him four times in this game. Why? Yeah. And he said they changed the way they were covering him. They went to cover two. And I was thinking automatically, you did a piece that made it on Twitter Titans beating cover two. Yep. And one of the great plays was Mariota's fantastic touchdown to Corey Davis against New England, which was against cover two. What kind of answer is that?
Yeah,
they went to cover two and we couldn't get to Corey Davis.
I struggle with those kinds of things because and Mike knows better, and I say that honestly. Yeah, I don't. Maybe he just didn't feel like answering it. Yeah. But there's any coverage, there's route concepts that beat any zone coverage. Okay, otherwise everybody would play the same zone coverage. Yeah, so you could design any route if you feel from an anticipation standpoint as a play caller that you're going to get cover two. And by the way, there's route concepts that attack multiple zone concepts, so that let's say you're running a cover two beater on the left side of the formation and a cover three beater on the right side of the formation. So that's not an answer. Mike knows that. But you can – zones do not take away receivers.
Greg, let's go around the league a bit. And we have not discussed Baker Mayfield with you in a couple of weeks. Let's go a layer beneath just, they're better since Hugh Jackson's not there. What has changed with him offensively now that his offensive coordinator and head coach have changed since week eight?
Well, I think it's the approach that they're taking with how they're running their offense. It's very rhythmic based. See, when you watch Baker Mayfield in college, and I didn't know a lot about him before I watched his tape last offseason, he's a very rhythmic, twitchy player. Everything he does is get back, get rid of the football, quick, compact delivery. He's not a runaround guy. So what you have to do is you have to try to build your scheme based on that kind of ability. Now, obviously, there's down and distances where that doesn't happen. But in general, when you're looking for how you want to build and structure your pass game within the context of an overall offense, because that factors in as well, is you want him to be able to drop back, hit his back foot, have the ball come out, play with rhythm, play with timing, be quick, be twitchy. That's what he is. And that's what they've done in that offense. To me, that was not what Hugh Jackson, that's not his offense. And I felt the same way. DeShone Kizer is not anything like Mayfield, but I felt last year with DeShone Kizer that they asked him to drop back too deep and make too many downfield throws, and that really killed the kid.
Where are the Vikings very consistent? I ask this because they're about to face the Patriots and the Seahawks after having a big win this past weekend.
Well, they're very solid on defense. That's where it starts, I think, for them. They've got a very good front. They've got a really good safety in Harrison Smith, who was so good with disguise before the snap of the ball. I saw a quote from Bill Belichick that he's similar to Troy Polamalu and Ed Reed in that regard, because he can do so many things before the snap that can cause problems for an offense, and that's very true. So their defense, I think, is their foundation. The thing that I find a little concerning with them, they tried to rectify it this past week, although they didn't have much success, but I think they have to keep doing it, is they're not running the ball at all. Prior to this week's game against Green Bay, they had the third fewest rushing attempts in the NFL. And, I think Kirk Cousins, when all said and done, is a guy who can execute a really well-schemed offense efficiently, but I don't think he's the kind of quarterback that you want dropping back 40, 45-plus times every game. And they've sort of gotten into that mode. Now, he had a very good game last week. He was efficient, but again, it was all quick game rhythm stuff. So I think they need to run the ball better.
Greg, the Chargers are 8-3. They'll be playing on Sunday Night Football against Pittsburgh. But aside from this week and just looking forward, and I know there's layers to this question too, do they have the personnel offensively to survive without Melvin Gordon?
He's a very good player in the context of that offense. You mean survive long term, like if they were to make a deep playoff run, or survive for
an 8-3 team? You're looking at that locker room should be thinking deep playoff run at 8-3.
No question.
Can they do that without him?
I think they probably could. He's good, but I think Ekeler is a very good receiver and a matchup piece that's problematic in the pass game. I don't think he's quite the runner Gordon is. Gordon's an interesting kind of runner because he came out of Wisconsin as kind of a speed, stretch-it-out runner, and he's not that at all in the NFL. He's much more of an inside grinder than he is sort of a stretch-it-out, take-it-to-the-house guy. So he does get tough yards. They do like to work him on the perimeter, though. But they've got a lot of weapons in the receiving game, and then they've got Phillip Rivers, who I think is just absolutely outstanding.
Another injury question for you, and I know I asked this to someone recently, not on the air, and I said, hey, how much will the Jack Doyle injury affect Indianapolis? And the quick answer was, well, they have Eric Ebron. And I thought to myself, I'm going to ask Greg about this, because how much did Doyle help Eric Ebron in the concepts of that offense and what Luck does getting the ball to their tight ends?
I think it speaks more to how they've been successful this year. Now, then it depends on if they can get some of these other tight ends back from injury, or maybe if they don't, then it has an impact. Because one of the things they've done really, really well this season is play with multiple tight ends. Two tight ends, obviously, most teams do that, but they play with three tight ends and have had a lot of success. Now, when you lose one of them, and a good one, that limits your personnel packages. So, again, it doesn't mean they can't run their offense, but it does present a limitation for what they have done well, and clearly Frank Reich and staff would like to do. So that's where the impact is. It's not that Doyle's catching 80 balls for 1,000 yards. It presents problems for defenses because they do a lot of things at a multiple tight ends, including spreading the formation.
What is possibly the explanation that Marcus Mariota statistically was one of the best quarterbacks in play action last year, and he is currently one of the worst?
Boy, that's a hard question to answer because the sample size over, you know, a short career like that is hard. So that's difficult because you'd almost have to look at individual plays and see why. It's like interceptions to some degree. When people say he throws too many interceptions, you have to look at the interceptions. You know, one thing that's been proven over time, by the way, is that there's not really any correlation between running the ball well and being effective with play action, and people just throw that out as gospel, and there's no real correlation there whatsoever. So even though this team does not run the ball with any consistency, that's not the reason in and of itself. So I don't have, PK, a really good answer for that, but I think overall their pass game has been very inconsistent, and that's probably just one aspect of it.
On the way out, Greg, what do the Jets do well?
Well, I think the one thing you probably have to be concerned about is Josh McCown still has functional ability to move around. And, I mean, there's a looseness and lack of discipline to his game that you try to get him to play that way with pressure, different coverage looks, disguises. You want to slow him down mentally and speed him up physically, but he still has that mobility to make plays outside of structure. And given that this is not an offense, the Titans that is, that normally puts up a lot of points, you have to be careful that you don't give up big plays. And I think defensively, the Jets, they don't have a lot of really good players. I think Jamal Adams is a big-time safety. I think Leonard Williams is a solid defensive lineman, but I don't think they have a lot of good players, and they're struggling with injuries.
Follow him on Twitter, at Greg Cosell. Greg, thank you as always, and
appreciate
we'll do it again next week.
All right, guys, appreciate it. Thanks. Yep.